Good afternoon. It's 1:35 on Monday, April 14th, 2014. I call the meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. We have with us Representative Hawker, Representative Olson, Representative Tarr, Representative Seaton, Co-Chair Feingold, and myself, Co-Chair Sadler. We have a quorum to conduct business. We have also with us Representative Kathy Munoz. And any other celebrities here? No, I don't think so. We're in good shape, so please clear your cell phones, as I remind myself. We have one meeting agenda item today. It's House Bill 325, Oil Spill Prevention Fund. Just remind members, this is our second meeting, second hearing on this bill. Representative Kawasaki has joined us. We first heard it on March 17th, and it's my intention to have a CS introduced and explained, and the committee discuss it and take additional public testimony, which has remained open since our last meeting. So I'd first ask for a motion from my co-chair to adopt the CS for HB 325 version U.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the CS for House Bill number 325-28-LS1486/uniform as the working document.
Seeing no objection, we have the CS before us then. Very good. Well, I would invite Representative Munoz and or her able staff to present the newest version of House Bill 325 and explain the changes between the earlier version of this one and let us know what's going on.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As you know from our last meeting, the idea for this legislation came out of the Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Environmental Conservation operating budget. For the past 2 years, we've heard presentations on the SPAR funds and the health of those funds. And the Spill Prevention and Response funds have been really a central topic of discussion over the last year and the previous year. This legislation, the original legislation, begins to address the funding issues with the SPAR account. Representative Seaton has offered several amendments that are wrapped up into the CS. The draft committee substitute version U adds language to the title on page 1, lines 3 through 7. It adds new language also to section 3 on page 2, lines 24 through 28. And it also adds sections, new sections 4 through 10, from the bottom of page 2 through page 4, lines 1 through 4. And as I said, these new sections are the work of Representative Paul Seaton, and I defer to him to explain the changes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Munoz. Welcome to the committee. Representative Seaton, could you speak to some of those changes were referenced.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the purpose of these changes were to address things that have been brought up by the committee. First of all, looking at the provision that allows DEC to collect fees for sea plants. In other words, how do we make this sustainable? One of the things is that a great amount of time is spent on analyzing contingency plans, oil spill contingency plans, and currently there's no charge for that. And so what we're looking at is saying that the user who is submitting the plan should pay for that evaluation, and so that is on section 7. And so we're trying to make sure that we distribute the costs and the financing that is necessary for spill prevention and response more broadly. There's been a lot of, a lot of questioning that the amount of all of the revenue to support spill response has come from only one thing, and that is the production of crude oil. And so that's what some of these topics are going to are addressing. So we also have then the fee for approving that plan under that is under Section 8. That's the C plan fee, and the other is on Section 7 is requiring that C plans be submitted in an electronic format. Not only will that make it searchable format, make it available to the department when they are trying to review these plans, but it also makes it available to the public. And that's been one of the things that we've talked about for a long time, is having the public, and the public doesn't just mean mom and pop in North Pole or Glen Allen. It's also to the mariners and the captains that are the ship's pilots. As they review these plans, it's really tough to do it when you've got a 1,000 pages of very technical stuff where they're non-searchable and not in electronic form. So this, right now, what has to happen is the Pilots Association, if they want to review and be able to comment and find out the adequacy of the plans, you know, they have to go into the main office and sit down with a paper copy, which just isn't the 21st century. So that's the purpose of those two things, and like I say, Section 8 is the increase in fees to analyze those plans. In Section 9, what we have is a deletion of authority for the funding of local emergency planning committees, and on Section 10, it's the elimination of two programs that authorize payment from the scope fund. One is for the committees, and the other is for the bulk fuel tank repairs. Neither of those are considered to be any more targets for this plan. Spill prevention and response need to be much more targeted, and so it removes those two from the authorities in the bill of what they can spend this money on. The other thing that probably the on number section 5 is the reporting of the refiner of crude oil or an importer of petroleum refined for resale shall report the volumes of crude imported or refined to the department. And that sets up the portion for the charge, which is, let's see, I've got to find exactly where that's located in here.
Page 2.
Page 2, which section is it?
24
section 3.
Section 3. Yeah. Oh, there it is. Thank you. Been involved in too many things today. So this sets up a system to accomplish what people have talked about in committee, that of broadening the base of the tax so it's not all only on crude oil. So this would be a refiner of crude oil or an importer of refined products. So this is the refined products are getting taxed at a half cent a gallon. So we are not talking about just crude oil. We're talking about refined products that go into the marketplace. And it's both on imported and refined in the state, so there's no competitive advantage of importing fuel over refining it in the state. So all of that would be taxed there. And I believe that's the majority of the bill that we have before us.
Thank you, Mrs. Heaton. For the record, Representative Peggy Wilson has joined us. I would note for members that we do have a couple folks from the departments available to answer questions as well. Kristen Ryan, who's DEC's SPAR director, is here, and Matt Fonder from the Department of Revenue's Tax Division is in the ether here. So I would ask questions from the committee for either the sponsor or Representative Heaton on the changes just discussed. I'll start off, Representative Heaton. Are there any products produced from Alaska refineries that would not be covered by this section? Just to make sure that it covers all refinery products.
It does. It covers, as it's written here, we have mechanisms where we can look at excluding motor fuel taxes or something if the committee wants to take a look at other mechanisms. But right now it's on all refined products.
Okay. Questions? Representative Feige starts us off.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the pie chart that is titled The Number of Spills by Product Type from Fiscal Year 2009 to Fiscal Year 2013.
You need to read the title of that. That's the document produced number 13. Which one?
see. It's in the... I believe it's an attachment to the letter we got from DEC. The letter dated March 26th from Ms. Ryan.
So it's kind of far back in the packet, the smaller. Mm-hmm. We're good.
Smaller ones,
yeah. I think this one's right.
Yeah. The single one.
Those, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And I guess my intent with something like this would be to, you know, of the number of spills and the responses and everything, to match the percentage of the income collected to fund this operation, I would think should essentially match the way that money is distributed out to the spills. So my question is, of the revenue generated in the current form of the bill, how is that revenue allocated? How does it get generated in relation, you know, between the refiners, between the crude oil producers? What is the relative ratio there in terms of overall money that supports the this particular division?
And for the record, Representative Johnson has joined us, and Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, I think on that we'll see if we can get DEC.
Need more microphones here or a bigger table.
Yeah. by special request.
I appreciate it. For the record, my name is Kristen Ryan. I am the director for the Division of Spill Prevention and Response for the Department of Environmental Conservation. And if I understand, Representative Feige was interested in if this new CS spread the income sources out more similar to how the spills are occurring by type of product. Is that what you're wondering? So the bill, the current version before us does a few things. It adds the fee for C-plan work. So C-plan work is mainly done on crude and non-crude. So I guess now that would capture, I can't give you a specific number of how that'd be spread out. But yes, those both would be captured under that new fee authority. And then the refined fuel tax would capture non-crude. But the majority of the response fund would still be funded by crude oil surcharge per barrel based on the current CS. But it would be more equitable than it is now. Right now our entire fund is based on crude oil. It would spread it out, I think, a little bit more equitably, but I wouldn't match this exactly.
Do you have a breakdown of how much of the revenue is projected to come from which part, whether it's the 7 cents or the half cent from the refiners or from the half cent of the importers?
Representative Feige, I do not at this point have that information. We do know how much revenue would be generated from an increase on the surcharge on crude oil. Increasing that to 7 cents would add, I believe, $2 million more. I'll have to double check that though to confirm and get back to you. But $4.69. Thank you. but the increase on the new fee on petroleum refined products, we don't quite know yet, and I'd have to defer to Department of Revenue to answer that. I know they provided some information to the committee already. I can cite that letter which you have before you that provided a range between, I believe it was $2 million and $11 million. Mm-hmm. But they were unsure because they don't have good forecasting information about, here it is, $3.2 million and $11.16 million which was a letter provided to Representative Seaton.
Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, that depends on how broadly it's spread. If it's spread to all refined fuels, or whether it's eliminating motor fuels, or if, you know, so there's a difference there. I think that on that March 7th, 2014 Department of Revenue letter, I think the bottom paragraph is probably our best analysis. It says, if I could just read into the record here, the 2009 DNR annual report reported annual fuel sales between 95 and 2008, including gasoline, avgas, kerosene, jet fuel, propane, diesel one, fuel oil two, number two, diesel. On average, DNR estimated 1.5 billion gallons of fuel were sold in Alaska per year, which would generate 7.3 million in revenues on the average. And then finally, if the surcharge were only placed on motor fuels, it would generate about $3.2 million a year on an average of 600,000 gallons of motor fuels per year. So we have those ranges. First of all, basically a total on all the distillate fuels of probably about 7.3 over those years, 95 through 08, and if it was just motor fuels, it would be 3.2. So if we wanted to look at non-motor fuel, we could take the 7.3 and subtract the 3.2 and come out about $4 million a year if we looked at it that way. And the purpose was of looking at this was to try to address concerns that have been addressed in the committee about the other people. What about the mines? They have a lot of volume of spills, but mines are generally pretty fuel intensive. So this would also capture that, because a half gallon of fuel based on their production. If you're looking at bulk fuel storage for electric generation, the bulk fuel tanks have been a subject of spills for sure. Mm-hmm. And so this half cent per gallon would also bring those players into the funding stream for spill prevention and response. So as we attempted to get to the point that the committee had asked to look at, how do we broaden the base of the tax, make all people that are subject to spills be contributors, this was a pretty easy way without getting into a very costly collection mechanism, because it's all, you could collect this only from the importers and the refiners of fuels, distillate fuels. So beyond that, if the committee wanted to cut down or cut out certain segments of that, it could be done.
Certainly, and for Director Ryan, what is the expected shortfall in the division starting next year? You're expected to have significant shortfalls, correct?
Representative Feige, the projected shortfall for the Division of Spill Prevention and Response is approximately $6 million a year.
Okay. Questions from committee? Representative Zee?
So, Mr. Chairman, just to reiterate, I mean, we're trying to, there were two elements that were really questioned, and one was, are there things that we can cut out of the spill prevention response funding that should no longer be there, and we've been able to eliminate two of those in this bill, and the other is, can we broaden out the revenue base for this? And so that's what we've accomplished through the distillate fuel portion. But, we've been seeking other suggestions, and if the committee has, other ways they would like to approach this. I mean, our problem was that we see revenue throughput shortfalls, all of these things in the next 10 years. And if we don't do something, we'll be just saying, well, let the general fund pay for it, and which means taking any shortfalls out of savings. And I think that we're trying to at least put something on the table that will address that issue. that we don't just say, well, let's let the CBR past revenues that we had pay for a operational deficit. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Parker.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And really just more of a capstone comment, and I'll be very honest with you. We still have us a bill that says just tax some more, tax one industry segment more to pay for every other segment. With all respect, I mean, these are de minimis changes, de minimis, relatively small changes within that matrix, and a relatively speaking small tax that's largely going to be paid by the consumers of motor fuel, which may well need to be there, but I don't see an analysis that's matching costs and expenses, which is what we need to be doing here. I still remain really concerned that this approach does simply say tax the guys with the deepest pockets without taking a very serious look at reducing our administrative burden. And I know you have an indirect cost plan on this that's federally approved, but are in compliance with federal indirect cost plan regulations. That doesn't mean we got to spend $2 million in administrative services to administrate this program every year, another $300,000 in state support services. And quite frankly, I don't see anything in here that really talks about more efficient and effective operations off the budgeted overhead right now. $3 million for contaminated sites, of which not a lot of that's state, a lot of that's federal. $3.5 million industry preparedness and pipeline operation. $4.7 million prevention and emergency response. Another $1.6 million, another $1.6 million on top of the $2.3 in administrative services and state support for response fund administration. I'm just not feeling the love here for better management. I really think if we're going to go forward with this, before we start raising taxes to continue to pay for an inefficient operation, we really need a lot more information in front of us. And frankly, with Mr. Chair, with respect, we need to truly see some internal changes in management and operations before we think about increasing taxes.
Yeah, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kristen, I know I was in a finance subcommittee, and there was a lot of things that you're mandated to take care of that there's absolutely no way to get funds from it. And now I don't know if you've changed some of that, because I wasn't involved with the changing from one version to another. But how much are we even dealing with that we've got things washing up on our shores that you have to deal with that are constant year after year after year, but there's no way to collect it from people? And even from the tsunami or from the stuff that's coming from Japan, that is a huge expense, and Japan has given some, but most of it's going, it's all up and down the West Coast, and so we're not getting a whole lot of it. So can you go into that and explain exactly what all is involved in that we're trying to figure out how to pay your department for doing a lot of the things that you do that is pretty hard to gather money from?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I need to put on the record is that the administration is not supportive of an increased tax on the petroleum refineries in state petroleum refineries. There's interest in trying to help some of the refineries that I know you guys are all more familiar with than I am. But to respond to your question, the Japanese tsunami debris, we aren't responding to that unless there's a hazardous substance involved. Perhaps solvent or oil barrel, then we would help respond. But otherwise, it's basically garbage, for lack of a better term, and is being dealt with as something that doesn't need to be responded to in an emergency situation, which is when we would be triggered, when there's a real threat to the environment or or human health or the animals. So that isn't not necessarily a good example of where our money is going, but there are plenty of activities that we do have to respond to where we don't generate. We aren't able to recover our costs. We have approximately about $3.5 million we bill out every year to try to recover some of our response costs, and we are currently, as in last year, you know, bringing back in about half of that. So I, as a new director, I've taken it upon myself to try to find ways to be more efficient with our cost recovery. And there's lots of examples I can give. The most recent one was just this weekend, the Prospector Hotel, some vandal, took the cap off their tank, oil tank, and there goes all the oil out of their oil tank and down through the sewer drain into the channel. So, you know, we'll recover some of our costs, hopefully, assuming their insurance company decides that that they're going to pay. But there's just a lot of times where we aren't able to find a responsible party, and we have this oil slick, and we've got to do something about it. So there's cost recovery is unfortunately a little bit tricky sometimes. And we have foreign flag vessels. I think you're referring to perhaps the Celandang IU. I've talked to other representatives about our concerns with that soybean spill. So foreign flag vessels aren't regulated by us. They're not required to have the financial assurance to clean up, and if we have to respond to them, it's very expensive. So those are a lot. There's a lot of activities we do that are in the prevention department, and I think some of the administrative costs that Representative Hawker has some concerns about can be clearly tied to improving response. All the drills that we do that we require industry to participate in to prove that they can respond. There's a lot of administrative work that is actually preventive in nature and worthwhile. There are other administrative costs in the department, which Representative Hawker mentioned that are more related to leases and keeping the lights on. So there's different kinds of administrative costs, I guess, is what I want to say.
Hey, Representative Wilson.
Ms. Ryan, what have you expended so far on Flint Hills, on the cleanup for the pollution at Flint Hills? That would be one that generated a charge back to fund you, wouldn't it?
Correct. So, Representative Olson, through the chair, we are using the response account for Flint Hills, and I believe we have charged $2.9 million to the response account to oversee the different aspects of that contamination plume and assessing it. And Flint Hills has paid us back about $1 million of it, and has refused to pay up and from that point forward. So now we're in court.
Follow up. You touched on part of it, but what were they paying when they were in full operation? What were they paying under the fund roughly each year?
That's all that's been generated.
Oh, total.
Total.
Thank you.
Any other questions from committee? And Director Ryan, on going back again to the number of spills by product type, that pie chart that I had referred to earlier, it shows non-crude oil at 74%, processed water 3%, crude oil at 3%, and then the other looks like about 20% is hazardous substances to one degree or another. Mm-hmm. Can you give us an idea of are these hazardous substances from a wide variety of different industries, or are they concentrated in particular industries? What's the distribution of those?
Representative Heige, the hazardous substance responses are primarily related to the seafood and mining industry. And the one thing that's slightly misleading about this is to really have a true sense of our costs, you need to see the time we spend on these spills. And a lot of releases and spills require very little time on our part. Perhaps, for example, processed waters, you can't clean that up. There's really not a, you know, a five-year-long cleanup process for that. Whereas for oil, there is. We really have to spend a lot of time cleaning it up. Solvents, in particular, are very expensive. Dry cleaning chemicals. So sometimes you need to. While this is a good snapshot of the numbers, it's not probably completely representative of the money we've spent responding to those bills. And I'm working on calculating that data now, but I don't have it available today.
Okay. And I assume as as soon as you're able to put that in a final form, you'll pass that on to us, because that is that really is the crux of all this, is how the money from the response and from the prevention fund is expended, and then try to match that up with
yes.
the revenue sources appropriately. So, Representative Seed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, one of the questions that came up has been on the trying to match up the people that are being taxed versus the, where the spills are being generated. And I just point out on that letter from the Department of Revenue that is to me, it was by request. I mean, they didn't come out and say, we want you to do this. I mean, the administration is opposed to any tax increases on crude oil, on refined products, on anything. So I just want to be clear, I'm not meaning that this letter is saying that they're supportive. But that $7.3 million at a half cent a gallon is meaning that if we're looking at a $6 million shortfall and the committee decided that they did not want to increase the crude oil tax at all, they could do that through this item alone. Mm-hmm. And so if the committee decides that that's they want to do that, that's fine. My problem is that, you know, I mean, I've worked for a while trying to eliminate sources. We had the derelict vessel bill last year because we had a lot of vessels and barges and things that are just being stored in state waters. Within the three-mile limit, they sink, and then we're responsible, and half the time it's a non-responsible party, and so we cannot recover any of that money. And so we passed a law preventing that, but it takes a long time to catch up on those things, and those, again, are preventive measures. So I would just hope that as we go forward, we look at how we're going to address these items and figure out a way to address them. I mean, there are several different mechanisms that are presented in this bill. There's not much time left in this legislature. I mean, nobody is thinking that we're going to zoom through both sides of the legislature on a bill that is especially one that is talking about taxes. But I'm hoping that what we're doing in our consideration here is thinking forward about how is it if we want to spread the revenue collections from the people that are causing spills, or their industry is causing spills, how are we going to collect that revenue? I think the easiest thing for the department is a C-plan fee. At least you're not making some of those expenses that Representative Hawker is talking about. A lot of expense reviewing all these C-plans, contingency oil spill plans, which are necessary, but we don't collect any money for them. And so the first thing is stop digging a hole, and that's one hole that we could stop by having the people submit the C-plans, first of all, do it in a way in which they can be analyzed easier, and second of all, that we can collect the fees for the administrative looking at that. So I think that that's what we're trying to do in this bill, is put forward a number of mechanisms that the legislature can look at developing to get to solving the problem. It's not as if we're saying that every one of these has to be in there. I think that cutting out those two programs is a good thing, so that we're not doing those community emergency response. We don't have the authorization for spending money on that, or these bulk fuel tank replacements. That should be done through a capital improvement project if those are going to be there. So getting that out of the spill prevention and response fund, I think, are very good pieces. But at some point in time, if we don't agree on some kind of a mechanism for assessing the industries and the people. I mean, you know, part of it is our, you know, my car and your car and our trucks. You know, if we're They're also liable for spills, so some there has to be some contribution there too, probably. But anyway, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the committee taking this up so that we can get these on the table, you know, get it on basis. People can think about this over the interim, and I believe Representative Munoz is of the same thought that what we're hoping to do is stimulate a conversation of how do we solve this problem. We're not saying that this is the ultimate, but this gives the range of things that we've been able to come up with that seemed feasible. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions and discussion? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And appreciate the conversation on this. As a member, like a couple of the other members on the budget subcommittee, we've been talking about this, and I think predates the couple of years that I've been on the subcommittee. And I like the range of options under consideration today, because as Representative Seaton just said, as far as user groups, I guess individual users that are consumers of refined products such as motor vehicle drivers, we are not currently contributing. So whether a half a cent per gallon, I guess, you know, maybe there'd be some concerns about whether that's the right amount. But that is one user group. And I was encouraged to hear Director Ryan say that she's working on that detailed information as to categorizing, you know, by user group, the cost associated with that, and that'll give us a little bit more direction. I guess my concern, though, with not doing something this year is, you know, what we do know, though, then next year is it will be a $6 million cost that will have to be paid for by the general fund. So in that sense, you know, I wish there was, you know, were some steps or pieces of this bill we could move forward with today with that information in mind. I understand if other folks aren't, I guess, prepared for that, but we do know that that's going to be the reality next year then, is that we'll have to cover those expenses through the general fund, which will mean, you know, other priorities may not be met. So difficult situation. Maybe we'll have more to go on when we see the categorical breakdown, but I do support the concept of the motor fuel tax, and if that were something that could be accomplished this year, even at a reduced amount, you know, I guess every little bit would get us closer to filling that gap that's going to be necessary for next year.
Okay, we do have some folks online that are willing to testify on this particular bill publicly, so at this time I'll open up public testimony and go to the off-net in Anchorage, Kara Moriarty from the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. Ms. Moriarty, are you there? Now I can hear you.
Can you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
We can hear you now. Go ahead and state your name and proceed.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Kara Moriarty. I'm the president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. And for the record, we do want to state that AOGA does not support the bill, nor does it support the current draft committee substitute that you've been discussing this afternoon. We are the professional trade association for the majority of oil and gas exploration, production, marketing, transportation, and refining activities in Alaska. We have been engaged in the policy decisions surrounding the Oil and Hazardous Release Response Fund, as we all refer to as the 470 Fund, since its inception. And I would just note that we did support the modifications back in 1994 and again in 2006 to determine how the surcharge was distributed. You know, unfortunately, we have been the only industry for the past 25 years to make any contributions to this fund, and we see this bill and this CS as only continuing that policy for a couple of reasons. One, the bill proposes to increase the surcharge to 7 cents. It attempts to add a surcharge for in-state refineries and those that import refined product. We don't see that as non-crude. We still see that as crude. It is already challenging at best to operate a refinery here in Alaska, and we do not see an additional surcharge as improving the business climate for refining here. And as far as trying to establish a fee for C plans, you know, the language currently says may and not shall. The fee is undefined, so we're not quite sure what that means. And I would just caution that industry, all industries in Alaska, submit several plans that are reviewed to different agencies, whether it's a C plan to DEC, plans of operation, plans of development, permits to drill. I'm not sure that that's a policy that we could support, to have all these individual plans have a fee associated with. So it's just something that we are cautious about. So while we do appreciate the work to tighten up what this fund is used for, because it has been abused in the past, the fact remains that the majority of the volumes reported are outside of the oil and gas industry, but this policy, in our view, just continues to look to only one solution by continually adding additional taxes on the industry that I represent. So I thank you for your consideration of our position, and I would take any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Ms. Moriarty. This is Representative Sadler, back in chair. Any questions for Kara Moriarty? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering, Ms. Moriarty, with the provision that talks about the motor fuel tax, if you all have taken a position on that, if that would be consumer, you know, driven revenue that we are not currently paying, if it was on the, you know, an additional surcharge on motor fuels, if you feel like that would be a fair step forward to try and expand the base of people who are paying into the fund.
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, I think in our view, it's still you're adding a tax on a refined product, and if the consumers may or may not, may or may not recognize what that is going for, and so we would have to evaluate how it's administered. But in our view, the way it's written is not an area we can support.
Thank you.
Other questions for Ms. Murray?
Representative
Wilson and then Seaton.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So you're saying that you want to be more fair and to be more user-based, but you don't agree with private people having to do it.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, you know, the way it's currently written, it's not on private, it's on a refinery that would pay that for each gallon of refined product or imported product. So in our mind, it's not, the way it's currently written is not a consumer tax, and in our mind, it's an oil and gas industry tax. You're just putting it on the refineries in addition to the producers. Okay. So that's how we see this current language.
Follow-up, Representative Wilson.
Thank you very much. That makes it a lot clearer to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And in the bill, there is also elimination of the two categories for expenditures. One's the local emergency planning communities and the bulk fuel tank repairs. Does your industry group have any position on eliminating those expenditures from the fund?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, we don't have a position specifically on those two different categories. We do applaud the department at tightening the reins, if you will, because over the last 25 years, I think the fund has been used for lots of variety of things that may not necessarily be related to oil spill response and preparedness. And so any effort you can do to continue to tighten the purpose and expenditures, we would support.
Thank you. And as we go forward into, you know, the next legislature, if I just request that your organization, if you look at the fund and look at those expenditures which you think that should not be allowed, and give us the feedback on those, because we've been having a hard time getting people to say what they think the fund should not be used for. I mean, we get a generalized comment, but if your organization, when it's assembled, or when you're doing it through emails or whatever, if you could ask your members if they have targeted pieces that should be eliminated from the expenditure of the funds, what they can be used for. That would be very appreciated as we go forward with some fix for the fund. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Seaton.
And Representative Seaton, through the chair, I would just say we would be happy to work with you and take a look at that, and especially work with the division director, as she mentioned, the report that she's currently working on and categorizing by different user groups. I will say it's, you know, that it's a policy call, you know, by the state of how you appropriate those funds, but we don't throw anything away here at AOGA. I actually found our 1994 testimony, and so, you know, I think we can go back and look at some of the original purposes, and I think that can help provide a guide for us moving forward, or for you, I should say.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Tark.
Thank you.
Other questions for AOGA? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Moriarty, for your testimony.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Looking at the sheets, if it has not already been noticed, we do have three gentlemen. Andy Rogers from the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce, available for questions. Breck Tostevin with the AG's office, and Matt Fonder with Revenue are also available for questions if you have them. And ask anybody else online to testify? Okay, great. Is there anybody in the room who'd care to testify on this legislation? I'm going to hold public testimony open to the future, but I'm also going to ask the departments to provide us with information on the updated fiscal notes, so we can work on the issues and costs through the interim. And Senator Tark, discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is me for the division director. I'm just wondering, one of the challenges with trying to get the other categories included is, what is your per barrel equivalent, you know, because that's how the surcharge is levied on the oil. And so just if you have any thoughts, I guess that's been the stumbling block and maybe what you're trying to work on, but thoughts on that. And then also, should we be thinking about gas development, and if we're going to be rewriting the statutes related to this, should we be thinking of, you know, a surcharge, and just looking into the future and if that would help equalize the fund? I just wonder, time-wise, if that's where we're at or should be thinking about.
Representative Tarth, through the chair, I'm not sure I completely understand, but I know we estimate right now, if we just went with the surcharge on oil, it would be approximately 9 cents per barrel that we would need to fill the gap in the prevention account. I know that's not what we're mainly talking about today, but I think that's what you were asking. And there may be other industries that we need to be considering. And when I look at all the costs in the division, I don't have very good statistics to go on yet, but we're getting there. We spend a lot on contaminated sites. I also want to make that point that, I mean, when you're looking at our budget, it's including all the work we're doing to oversee contaminated sites, and there's a lot of those out there that just don't have owners, and they can cost a lot to clean up. So it's always sort of a debate about the costs, what industry necessarily would be the responsible party in that case. If you're trying to equalize your fund sources with a spill, well, it's usually a petroleum product. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I think we've all been focused on looking at a petroleum product format, some kind of a refined fuel tax, and other states also use that as a source of revenue for this work.
Thank you. Follow-up question? Mm-hmm. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, for example, when we look at the pie charts there that show mining, mm-hmm. you know, and we don't have a per barrel equivalent, you know, have you thought of something
you know, on an annual fee kind of basis or something like that, that would be a mechanism for another industry to be contributing toward the fund?
Representative Carthy, the chair, I mean, it's all tied to petrol. I mean, most of the spills are fuel. Mm-hmm. So they're either in a village or they're at a mine site or they're in a boat. We have never looked at, you know, going after specific subgroups. When, if you ever were going to implement something like that, the most economical way would be to do it at the wholesale level. Because it's the same product, it's just being spilt by different industries. And I guess the assumption is that the cost would be passed on to the spiller.
Other questions?
I just wanted to close my opportunity to comment by thanking you for the ability to allow us to continue the conversation. I've enjoyed working on the subcommittee, the Department of Environmental Conservation Budget Subcommittee, very much, and I appreciate the work of the committee members in their diligence in trying to find a solution to this issue. For 2 years now, we've put intent language in the operating budget asking the department to come back with solutions on how to deal with the long-term viability of the spill response division. And this is really the beginning of a conversation that will continue over the interim. And I appreciate all of the ideas that have been discussed and Representative Seaton's ideas that we will continue to explore. So with that, I want to thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Nunez. Appreciate that. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And listening to Aoga's testimony, I noticed that they did point out something, that this says fees may be collected for approving a plan instead of shall be collected. And so I just wanted to note for that we're listening to the public comments. And also I wanted to ask the department whether they are going to generate a fee schedule that would be proposed for next year, because when we have fees, but they're right now it's just open-ended. So we really need, before we come back, if we're talking about a fee schedule, we need to know what would be an appropriate fee schedule. And I'm sure there's those that are on marine waters and there's those that are on land, and whatever those categories are, it's not going to just be every sea plan costs X. And so, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to request the department for the committee next year to develop a schedule of fees that would be appropriate for the analysis of sea plans, and also a recommendation of whether that should be shall instead of may, because we don't, you know, we're just getting in public here, but I'd really like to get the department feedback when they have time to actually do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ryan.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, just give you a little bit of information. We will give you a schedule, but I want to just give you the broad brush strokes of what fees would look like. All that work is done by our Industry Preparedness and Prevention Division, or section, and their budget's about $5 million a year. And I'm guessing about 60 to 65% of their work is based on sea plans. So that gives you a sense. It's about $3 million that we're spending out of the prevention account to do sea plan related work. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of them. There's only about 135 sea plans. So it's they're very time consuming. And if we charged, and some are way more time consuming than others, for example, the Valdez Marine Terminal. I mean, we have full-time staff. That's all they work on is the sea plan for the Valdez Marine Terminal. So there would have to be a graduated rate depending on how complicated the plan is. But even in that case, there aren't that many. I mean, there's just 137 plans. So it won't solve our problem, but it would generate some revenue.
Sure. Thank you. Other questions? Well, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm just wondering now, because the conversation about contaminated sites and sites that it's difficult to locate previous owners, and so, you know, how could you find the responsible party to build to or do cost recovery? Would it be appropriate for us to be thinking about some sort of separation where some of the contaminated sites cleanup would be general fund dollars, because
if there's no opportunity to find a responsible party, we don't really have the mechanism. And then we restrict by a date or something, and that, maybe that's not the easiest way, but I'm just thinking after such a date, then, you know, then these items would be the responsibility of the fund, and maybe that would sort of help us more clearly segregate who's responsible, and as general funds are available, as prioritized by the department, we could address the contaminated sites.
Representative Tari, yes, I think there's some mechanisms we should look at there. I think that has been a point that's been brought up before, that the fund shouldn't be used, especially for state contaminated sites. There is lots of state contaminated sites that the fund was previously used to clean up. We don't do that anymore. We get asked for capital appropriations now to handle state sites. But then we spend several million a year still overseeing federal sites and other sites out there that, you know, that maybe there's another mechanism we could use general fund to cover those costs.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Thank you. And, you know, in trying to develop different scenarios, one thing that has come up is that people have said, well, gee, we're increasing TAP's throughput, and so it's all going to take care of itself. And so what I would like to do is make sure that when the departments come back and address us, they're basing it on the forecast, the 10-year forecast from the Department of Revenue, because that takes DNR's production and everything, because currently what we have from the spring forecast is the price of oil is projected from 2014 at 106, rising to $131 in 2023, and yet the unrestricted petroleum revenue dropping from 4.6 billion this year to 3.4 billion in 2023. So obviously with price increasing, this is related to volume decreases, and since our current structure is based on price per barrel, or not on price per barrel, but on cents per barrel, we are going downhill fast. And so I just want to make sure that whatever comes back from each department, if someone is saying, well, the increased production is going to take care of it, and we'll have those cents over more barrels, that they actually bring us data that shows that our best state estimate from DNR and DOR coincides with that scenario, because right now it doesn't. Right now it shows that we're going to be in declining production mode, slowing the decline, which is great, slowing the decline, but still this is the Department of Revenue, Department of Natural Resources best guesstimate. So I just want to make sure as we come back and address this, we actually have them basing it on the best projection that we're using in the revenue source book.
Thank you, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kristen, I don't even know if I'm thinking of, we have a lot of federal land in Alaska, and so a lot of these cleanups, and I know for the contaminated well sites, we're not doing so hot with it. But is there any mechanism at all that we can get money back from the feds when we try to clean up something that they're responsible for?
Representative Wilson, to the chair, and we do. We cost recover from the federal government in a lot of cases, and in fact generate about $4 million a year in federal receipt authority in the contaminated sites program alone. But we still spend probably another $3 million for things they won't pay for. There's just sometimes a lot of pre-work that has to go into a site before you can even get to that point, or they just don't pay our bills. In fact, we've just reached a settlement on a site in Aniak that was a federal mistake, and it's taken us 8 years to get to the point where we now have agreement that they're the responsible party and they're going to pay. So prevention accounts had to pay our costs that whole time and our legal costs to negotiate with them to come up with a settlement. So, but we do pursue them for every cost that they will legally pay. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, good deal. I anticipate you're going to have a long summer, and we'll get a lot of spreadsheets back, lots of data. Good deal. I do want to make sure, because we do have public testimony open at this point, to make sure there's no one in the room that wants to testify, or either Mr. Rogers or Tostevin online that want to testify, in case there are any technical glitches. Not hearing any, so we will hold public testimony open. And at this point, I'm going to set the bill aside for the continued work that's going to happen over the interim. And for the members' notice, there are no additional meetings scheduled, but that, of course, could change at any given moment with the work coming out of the other body, and with we'd like to give as much notice as possible with the 24-hour rule. That's we'll do the best we can given the circumstances. So with that, I will declare us adjourned at 35 minutes after 2 p.m.